What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 68, Bigger, Stronger, Faster, recorded February 5th, 2014. This week, our special guest is Dr. Michael Pyle. He has been a physical therapist for 15 years, a personal trainer for 10 before that, and maybe he'll give you a gun show if you're looking later. He's been working out with weights for quite a while, and there's a reason that some people call him Big Mike. He's got some big, swole arms, so we're going to find out how to get stronger and better on the field. All right, if you want to join our conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. There's links just about every single way to connect with us, with Twitter, with Facebook. We're trying something new on the Google Hangout, where if you use the hashtag TheSMB, so hashtag TheSMB, which Aisha is tweeting out, then it should show up on the Google Plus live stream, and Edith should be able to read it and comment or ask Dr. Powell your question. So using the hashtag TheSMB should bring that in. And again, we're trying it out new, so if it doesn't work perfectly or if we miss some, that's just how it happens. So again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com to check out or to join our conversation in any way today with Dr. Michael Pyle from Memorial Hermann Physical Therapy Clinic right here in Pasadena. Of course, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson, but the people you really enjoy listening to are
George,
Marlin,
Edith,
Brianna,
Jocelyn,
Alex,
Lorena,
Marissa,
Aisha,
and then Dr. Pyle over there. All right, Dr. Pyle, you have anything special you want to mention? We can get to put that in the show notes. Have you done any marathons, won any bodybuilding contests, that kind of thing?
When I originally started out, that's what I wanted to be, a professional bodybuilder. And as I moved up into the ranks, I started realizing that they were doing a lot of performance-enhancing drugs to get to the level of becoming a professional. And when I discovered, that's what they were doing, I stopped bodybuilding but continued to strength train and became a physical therapist, started going to physical therapy school and became a physical therapist. So I've been a physical therapist for 15 years. I have an expertise in strengthening because I've done it for such a long time. I'm a board-certified orthopedic specialist, which is a big test that I had to take, very, very difficult test. And I just got my doctorate last year on orthopedics, manual therapy, and cervical radiculopathy. Was my area of expertise that I wrote my paper on. The same thing that Peyton Manning had. He had a surgery for cervical radiculopathy. Cervical radiculopathy sounds like it's really fancy, and really it is. It's pain that is originating from your neck that radiates down your arm. So Peyton Manning, he had nerve damage to his throwing arm and had to have a serious surgery, and completely remarkable from the knowledge that I know of that type of surgery for him to have the year that he had is truly, truly exceptional.
So you said cervical radiculopathy is what you get your doctorate in?
I wrote my doctoral paper.
Doctoral thesis on that?
Right.
Gotcha. And when did you finish up your doctorate?
Last year, about a year ago. Thank goodness I'm done.
Good. Very cool. Very cool. All right, so you told us a little bit, but
Dr. Pyle, please tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, I think I just did, but
yeah.
What else can I add to that? This is a passion of my life. Exercise, physical therapy. So primarily, what I'm focusing on now is I'm focused on rehabilitation of athletes after knee injuries. I work closely with Dr. Crumby, who studied under Dr. Lowe, who was who's the team doctor for the Texans, and he's doing really, really good work. And me and him work closely together, and he sends me a lot of the athletes to rehabilitate them and get them back to where they can play football or their respective sports again.
All right, so I think we've talked about Dr. Crumby, and it's been really cool to be able to go over and watch his surgeries and stuff like that. And so he's a really good guy. And I know that it's benefited us by you going, him being so open and you going over there. And now you know what he's looking for whenever he's checking out a patient to see if they're clear it or return to play so that you can kind of give us a heads up so what we need to work on and focus on and kind of test our kids before they go to the doctor rather than just sending them blind and then, okay, we'll come back in 2 weeks. You know, so it's been really cool working with Memorial Hermann and, you know, all the connections that we've been able to make. And I think it's really improved who I am as an athletic trainer. And then it's opened up a lot of doors for the students here to talk to medical professionals like you and Bubba's come and a couple other people. So it's been really cool working with Memorial Hermann so far. So
yeah, I mean, it's nice. That was another thing that I really worked on last year, and I want to continue to work on it, is developing good relationships with the athletic trainers so we have a smooth transition from physical therapy to athletic training, and so we can just all work together to have our athletes recover and be the best that they possibly can.
What is the most important ingredient to getting stronger?
Oh man, you're gonna try to pin me down to one ingredient? This would be like a stupid answer, but it's like to work out. Okay, now this will give you the long-winded answer. Progressive resistance training, which means you need to train with weights and you need to try to, each and every time that you work out, you need to try to do more weight. Like, let's say you can do 6 pull-ups. You need to work harder to where you can get 8 pull-ups, 9 pull-ups. The more pull-ups that you can do without stopping, the stronger you will be.
So, like, building up to it.
Yeah, but the real problem is you need to do this progressive resistance strength training, and you need to do it for consistently for a long period of time. You can't do it for a week. You can't do it for a month. You need to be looking at doing it for 6 months to make significant gains. You really need to be looking at the long term of consistently strength training over a long period of time. I mean, I've been doing it for 30 years. The most I've ever taken off is 2 weeks in 30 years.
Does stronger on the weight room mean stronger on the field?
Yes, it does. If you are stronger and develop more strength in your muscles, you will be stronger in your respective sport. However, you have to train. After you develop that extra strength, you have to train sport-specific to utilize that newly gained strength and be able to utilize it into whatever you do. You need to be able to have good technique it definitely does, but there's a caveat, is that you have to work hard on the field to convert that strength to usable increased strength in what you do for your sport.
So I've been talking to a couple of people about functional movement, and that's kind of what you're saying there. What is your thoughts on, right now football just ended or recently ended, so they're in there working on what they call the big three, the squat, the power clean, and the bench.
Perfect.
And then, so what's their next step? Now that they're, trying to add the extra strength and the extra bulk, what's their next step?
You probably can answer this better than me. See, the thing is that I'm a physical therapist, so I don't do really sports specific. I don't see them out at the field. I get them strong, and then I turn them over to you guys. So, it's going to be highly individualistic on what their sport is, and you have to think about what it is that they need to do, and then translate that over to specific drills that reinforce the strength that they have. I mean, it's football, what position do you play? Swimming. I used to be a competitive swimmer. I know a lot about swimming. So, you really work your lats and get them really, really strong, and then you start converting it over to, just your swim practice. Because let's say you took off from swimming for, 3 months and just worked out and got a lot stronger. You're going to have a period where you'll probably be a little bit slower until you practice and convert that muscle over to be usable and swimming. So.
Gotcha. So you need to make sure you plan in a period of transitioning that muscle from just being strong to being useful.
Right.
If there was one muscle group that is most important for an athlete to train, which would you pick?
So you guys are all trying to single me down as something. Okay, so every muscle is incredibly important, but I will pick muscles. I'm just going to say I'm very, you know, I make sure that I look at the whole entire body. I mean, abs, lower back, arms, you know, I want everything trained. The more that you have everything developed, the better you'll be. Now, if you're going to pin me down to something, it's going to be, I'm going to go, did you ask muscle group or a muscle? Say muscle group, because of the
muscle group.
Right, there you go. Glutes and quads. If I'm going to go for those, if you look at all the sports, running, football, soccer, baseball, the stronger that your glutes and quads are, the better you'll be. But there's no way that I would just want to train glutes and quads, because you got to train. You would develop imbalances. You need to have hamstrings that are strong, calves that are strong, lower back that's strong. But if you're going to pin me for those, the two most important, it will be glutes and quadricep muscle. And how do you train those? I mean, it's the stuff that you're saying. And that's the thing. It's not anything fancy to it. It's squats. It's lunges. It's deadlifts. It's those are the bread and butter of developing strong glutes and quads. So.
All right, so when I thought about that question, I just assumed that you would say the core, because a lot of stuff talks about having core strength, and it's the center of everything you do. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that you would say glutes and quads, because I just assumed you would say core, and then you kind of tell us a little bit what you do to train your core. But
well, the thing about that one is when I look into the core, a lot of people think it's the abs, and I've really over time understand that it's really your lower back, and your glutes tie in closely with your lower back. So there would be no way that I could exclude your core. But if you were strengthening your glutes with the exercises that I was talking about, that's going to get your lower back really good. But there is no question. See, you pin me down to, you know, the particular muscle groups. But there's no doubt, if you have a super strong glutes and super strong quads, and your core is lacking, you're going to have problems. I mean, it's all got to be developed together. So.
Okay, so I remembered one of the questions. You said you've only not worked out for a total of two weeks, or did you say 2 weeks at a time?
The most I've ever taken off is 2 weeks. It's been several times that it's been almost 2 weeks.
Okay, I gotcha. So, like, today, if you're going to work out, are you going to work out there at the clinic before or after work, or are you going to go to somewhere else?
I work out at a gym, but I also work out at the clinic. It's much more convenient that way, and I'm devising a high-level routine for my athletes. At my clinic, we really don't have a lot of free weights, and I'm used to working out with free weights on everything that I do. So I've been putting together a whole series of Bulgarian split squats, walking lunges, one-legged squats, triple thread on the physio ball. So I have this whole routine, and what I do is I make sure that I do these routines myself. And so today I'm doing Bulgarian split squats and walking lunges. I have this whole routine set out that I'm going to do at the clinic, and I'm going to kill it. Also, I'm going snowboarding in a month, so I'm doing some sports-specific training for snowboarding. So I'm strong, but now I'm trying to, like I was talking before, trying to convert this over to a useful function. So now I'm doing a jump program. I'm using a tilt board that mimics snowboarding, and I'm doing 360s on it. And see, so I'm converting, you know, what I'm doing over to something useful. I'm backing off on working out my upper body, because you don't need upper body you know, you don't need to be really big to be snowboarding. I've never seen a snowboarder that weighs 225 pounds yet.
Yeah, they're usually a little bit smaller.
125, yeah, exactly. So
sweet. Very cool. I've been snow skiing one time. Obviously, here in Houston, it's not something we do very often, but I'd like to try snowboarding sometime. But I think that's my brother-in-law. He, I think he was snowboarding. He may have been skiing, but he ate it one time, and he fractured his tibia, tore his ACL, tore his MCL and meniscus, so he did pretty good damage there. So maybe he just wasn't training for the snowboarding like you. Maybe.
Hey,
maybe.
If you snowboard or ski long enough, you're going to have some type of an injury. Yeah. I haven't been injured so far, and superstitious. But it's one of the reasons why it's so much fun is the, you know, there is a fear factor. I just think it's a great winter vacation where I am highly active. You know, you can eat as much as you want. You know, you expend a lot of calories. I just think it's a great break from my regular routine.
Very cool. So while you're there snowboarding, you know, obviously you're going to be working out while you're snowboarding. Are you going to be doing any sort of other workout, like, you know, in the morning you wake up and do 100 push-ups or anything like that?
Not at all. So that whole week, completely taken off from any type of strength training. I will strength train the week before. And basically, I work my legs, overtrain them a little bit, train like 3 days in a row of bicycling, and then take off for a whole week before I go snowboarding. So my legs are super compensated. Because 4 days in a row of snowboarding, your legs start frying out on you completely.
Yeah.
Right.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
But, okay, so I don't do any type of strengthening, but I have a rigorous stretching routine. So when you snowboard or your hip flexors get really tight, so I do hip flexor stretches. You know, the people that I'm with will be looking at me, and in the morning I'm doing piriformis stretch, hamstring stretch, you know, because they get tight, and it feels way better after you do it. So I stretch in the morning and at night every time, every day that I'm there.
Nice. We've been talking about, like you said, functional movement, and we've been just this year, I think last year we ordered some foam rollers. And one of those little massage stick things. We've been trying to use those a lot more to help increase muscle flexibility. And so I don't keep statistics, but I feel like using those have helped a lot with just relaxing the muscles and allowing the athletes to kind of return to play. So I like the foam rollers a lot. And like you said, just stretching and making sure they're warmed up and ready to go. So, and we've been talking to some other people about how they used to incorporate yoga and some stretching and foam roll stretches and that kind of thing. And so I think that's definitely a good reiteration of a point that we've already kind of covered a good bit, just making sure you're stretching before and after to keep you loose, keep you from getting tight and injured. So,
yeah, it took me a long time to incorporate stretching into my routine, and it is really, really important. And it's the same thing, you know, as the you know, question for strength training is, the way that you achieve increased flexibility is consistently stretching over a long period of time. I think there might be a theme behind this. The people that make the difference, pick it, do it, stick with it. You know, the ones that don't make a big difference is the ones that train really hard, like 6 days a week for 2 weeks. You know, I train 3 days a week for
5 years.
Yeah. 10 years. Yeah. And I know for you guys in high school, you're like, that's way too long. So in high school, don't be thinking that. But you need to be thinking 6 months. And then you need to be thinking, when I hit 6 months, what am I going to do? You can't stop or you'll lose it all. So you have to think of a fitness lifestyle that you can maintain for a long period of time to make significant differences.
Consistency is kind of the theme that I'm getting here. Consistent working out, consistent stretching.
How can I improve my speed on the track?
We kind of covered that a little bit, though. That is not my area of expertise of teaching people to run on a track. So how do you get faster? Get stronger. Get stronger calves, get stronger hamstrings, get stronger glutes, get stronger quads, get stronger core, abs, and lower back. get those stronger, put your time in the gym, and then go to your coach and do the drills that you do to incorporate your newly gained strength into being able to run faster.
So since track season or track practice started last week, it's probably not the time to try and get stronger, right? It's time to kind of work into the running and conditioning.
And see, I can't answer that one because I don't do that. I don't have a track at my place. I would like to get into it. It's just, you know, I rehab them, I get them to this point, and then I turn them over to your guys, and that's your area of expertise. The other thing I would mention, though, is flexibility. Absolutely. I mean, you've got to make sure that you stretch, stretch your hip flexors. A lot of people don't stretch those hip flexors, and that really helps you, you know, when you're running and you bring your leg behind you, it makes it happen with more increased ease and keeps you from rotating your body too much. So that's one thing that you definitely do is work on your flexibility.
Aisha, what did you hurt last year? Was it your quad or hamstring?
My quad.
Quad. So we did a good bit of work with that. Did you feel like you ever fully recovered?
Yeah. Well, I haven't been, like, running, like, my full speed because I'm scared that I might hurt it again. But I'll start off jogging, and then, like, I'll speed up. But it doesn't hurt no more now.
Do you stretch your quad?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's important, especially after an injury. It was a partial quad tear or pulled it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a strain.
Strain. That's a partial tear. So, yeah, definitely you got to continue stretching it. That really helps because after you have a strain, when it heals, it has a tendency to heal back tighter. And so it's really, really important to stretch. Like, you know, for example, for me, when I work out and the muscles that I get sore, after they're sore, those are the days that I really concentrate on stretching those muscles because they're trying to heal. And they'll try to heal back in a tightened position. And that's where you see these guys that are all muscle bound, you know, because they never stretch and they just keep working out and then they get tighter and tighter and more like this and more like this. Right.
Yeah. So you see the stories about the huge bodybuilder guys that can't reach around to wipe themselves after going to the bathroom.
It makes you tighter. Strength training makes you tighter. Yeah.
All right. So you got to make sure you work on. All right. So if she was, say, strained her quad, or if she wants to do some stuff right now to kind of prevent injuries, in your professional opinion, what do you think is going to be something that she can do now? Because track season just started, so if she's going to kind of be working into the conditioning of track with possibly, you know, mentally having a quad injury, not necessarily physically, what do you think?
Definitely need to stretch your quad, and definitely need to strengthen. As far as the mental aspect of it, that's a good question. I mean, you just have to make sure you warm up thoroughly and work into it slowly and develop more and more confidence with what you're doing before you go to the all-out sprint. You know, it's just like for me, when I start getting people in the jogging program again after they tear their ACL, I mean, I start off having them walk for 2 minutes and jog lightly for 3 minutes and do that for about 15, 20 minutes, and then if that works good, then walk for 1 minute, jog for 4 minutes, and just slowly progress them faster and faster and faster. And that's what I would do with you in your situation is, you know, just slowly work up to it. Watch you. Look how your technique for your running, see if there's any deficits, see if there's anything we need to work on. Definitely, I would be spending a lot of time working your core, not just your abs, but your lower back and your glutes. I think that would be a good mechanism to get you back running faster than ever.
Sweet.
All right, so for her stretching of her quad, what are some of your favorite quad stretches? I know you showed us one at the beginning of this year.
The rectus femoris stretch. Yeah, and I don't even, there's no place I could even demonstrate it.
Right there.
No, you have to have a table.
A table?
Yeah. Because that's the problem is that everybody stretches their quad, and it's typically not the quad that's tight. That's the rectus femoris. So your quadricep muscles, there's four of them. That's why it's called quadricep. But you got one of those four muscles that's a rectus femoris. The rectus femoris attaches where all the other quad muscles do, come through across your knee to your tibial tuberosity, and then it comes all the way across the front of your hip joint. So this front part of your hip joint gets really, really, really tight, and it's one of my favorite stretches. It's like I can pick anybody who has a knee injury, a hip injury, and that muscle is always tight. It's just from limping and from, you know, walking with crutches. So that absolutely is my favorite quad stretch. And I try to show everybody, but you have to have a table to be able to do it.
All right, so do you have a video of you showing that or somebody showing that, you know, of any on YouTube? I mean, I guess I could.
Not at all, but, you know, it's funny that you had mentioned that because, you know, a lot of the pictures I have on my exercise program just are not cutting it for me. So I am making an effort this year to put together pictures of all my favorite exercises and putting it all together, but I do not have it yet. And I keep saying I'm going to do it, and I don't do it. But, I mean, it's I really need to do it. I need to put together, you know, my
gotcha.
Stretches. So, I do have a picture of the rectus femoris stretch, though.
So let me see if I can describe it, and then you can kind of correct me. All right, so if it's my right rectus femoris that we're working on stretching, then my body's going to be laying about halfway off of the edge of the table with my left leg on the floor.
Right.
My stomach down on the table, and then my right leg, since that's the one we're stretching, is the one that's going to be pulling my heel to my butt. Does right. that sound?
Yeah, that's exactly it. But I mean, there's so many different aspects to it. The foot that's on the ground, you have to walk it forward. Because that's the whole reason behind it is if you just do the classic quad stretch where you stand and pull your heel up toward your butt, it doesn't stretch your rectus femoris. What you have to do is you have to lock it down with the other leg and pull your hip forward to be able to stretch it right here. So, but that's basically it in a nutshell. But, you know, I can bring a picture and we can go over it because it's a stretch that a lot of physical therapists don't know about. And it was my advanced studies where someone showed it to me and mine was tight and I stretched it for a long time and I'm like hooked on that stretch with my patients. I think it helps increase the actual quad development because when it's tight, it has a tendency not to grow after you strengthen it. Just the flexibility of your hip, you know. My profession, I mean, there's characteristic muscles that are always tight with people. And there's characteristic imbalances of tight muscles and weak muscles. So I stretch the tight muscles, strengthen the weak muscles, and it makes it makes everything better. Everything goes together when you're better, when your body is in balance.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. A guy that we've had on here before, Joshua Stone, just recently wrote a blog post about things being in balance. You know, you're talking about the tensor fascia latae is almost always tight in people. And so my question then is it abnormal then? Is it not designed to be that? If it's always tight, like how do I know that God didn't create that to be tight for a reason? Like loosening that up doesn't create some other sort of shift or problem.
Right. It's not a bad question. The thing is that it's really positions that we maintain throughout over a period of time that creates these imbalances. So, for example, every one of us now is sitting, and I'm pretty sure that for school and my job, I spend a lot of time sitting. I don't know how many hours, you know, yeah. I get up and walk, but a couple hours a day of just sitting. So when you're sitting right now, guess what's happening? Your hip flexors are in a shortened position. So
they're not being stretched. So they're getting tight.
Right. And the muscles work, you know, antagonistically. So you have your hip flexors that get tight. Then the muscle that works in the opposite direction gets weak. So your hip flexors get tight. And your glutes get weak. So when you stretch your hip flexors and strengthen your glutes, that restores balance. And when the balance is restored, you have less hip problems. You know. But there is certain, you know, I see some females that are very, very flexible And they're sitting around always popping their joints and becoming more and more. There's a degree where you can become almost too flexible where it will impede your performance unless you're a gymnast or, you know, something like that.
Unless you work for Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Okay. I gotcha. All right, Lorena, you ready?
If you were to say you're an expert at one thing in your field, what would it be?
Man, you guys are always trying to pin me to one thing. I'm a board-certified orthopedic specialist, so that means that I do all orthopedics. I do ankles, knees, hips, back, shoulders. But if you're going to pin me down to stuff, it's going to be I'm an expert at cervical radiculopathy. And now my passion for the past 4 years has been rehabilitation of athletes after injuries, particularly after ACL reconstructive surgery. That is what I've been focusing my main thing, and that is what I'm becoming an expert on. I mean, I'm spending this whole year, and I've been spending the last 3 or 4 years, but I'm really reading everything and really, really devoting a lot of time to it, so...
That's a pretty big business right now, ACL. I mean, everybody hears the story of Adrian Peterson or Lindsey Vonn, you know, coming back. Adrian Peterson having a, you know, hallmark year, and
right.
And Lindsey Vonn just re-injuring herself. So, you know, everybody's like, oh, well, they came back so fast. Why can't I? Well, their whole day is spent around rehab. But
I mean, I use that all the time, and people ask me all the time, you know, you know, when can I be back? And when you really look at ACL injuries, I mean, to return to the high-level sport that you need to return to, you really need to be looking at a year. Okay, Adrian Peterson did it quicker. He did it in 9.5 months. You know, every once in a while you have a freak that can do it at that quick. But, you know, it takes a long time to develop the strength, the balance, the proprioception, the everything to be able to return. And, you know, Dr. Crumby and me have talked about it, and, you know, people are trying to rush it so much, but you just got to get it out of your head to try to rush it so much, because the research shows that if you can make it a year without tearing that ACL, it's no more likely to tear than your other ACL. But before that time, it's got an increased chance of tearing. So, you know, it's precarious. You know, I've had several athletes that really wanted to return quick, and I've had several of them that have torn their ACL again, and it's just not a good thing at all. So, you know.
One thing, when I went to the sports medicine conference in San Antonio like 2 weeks ago, and then when I was talking to the strength and conditioning guy for the Astros, they were saying quad exercises, you shouldn't do any leg extensions. So where your foot is off the ground. And so what are your thoughts on doing quad strengthening exercises where your foot is off the ground or not in contact with the floor?
The research shows that puts a lot of stress on your ACL. Do I think it puts so much stress on your ACL that it would cause a problem? No, I really think that it's, you know, because the research shows that it puts extra stress on it, that no one ever does it. I don't do it either, but to be honest with you, I think you could do it, but it's just a contraindication from every doctor, so I'm not going to step out of the bounds. And a lot of the doctors just say never do that exercise. For me, I do leg extensions. I like them. They work on my legs. It doesn't hurt my knee, doesn't hurt my kneecap, and so I like them, you know.
But so personally, you do them, but professionally, you're gonna plead the fifth.
I won't do it with my athletes. I mean, the only one that I've ever done sometime is, you know, for the quad set, I will set the leg extension machine up to where it just goes from there to there, so they have weight, so it's doing a weighted quad set.
Gotcha.
Because the least amount of stress is for the last, like, 10 degrees on the ACL. So I've done that before a couple of times. But
Yeah, because that was kind of my question was about the straight leg raises. You know, the first thing we do with any sort of ACL or basically knee injury is quad sets and then straight leg, four directional straight leg raises and then quad and hamstring stretching. So straight leg raises are foot off the ground. They're not necessarily leg extensions. And so I was just wondering how that kind of played in.
They're different. They don't put stress on your ACL. As long as that leg is completely straight. That's why I was saying, like, you know, putting the weight on it and just doing it that much. It's doing it from here to there that really puts a lot of stress on your ACL.
Gotcha. So on that same note, have you seen, I don't know if it's new or not, but it's kind of hot right now, the new ACL test where you put your fist underneath the calf and you press down above the knee, and if the ACL is torn, then the lower leg will not, then the heel won't come off the table, but if the ACL is intact, if you press down above the knee, then the ACL, I mean the heel will come off the table. Have you seen?
Brand new one. I have not heard that one.
Yeah, it was new to me. And, you know, it's Twitter and Facebook, those kind of things. You see all that kind of stuff. And I've, the last two people that have come in with the knee thing, I've done it, but they've had a solid ACL, so I can't get a positive on it. I was just wondering if you'd seen that at all.
Well, you know, I've done a lot of the different tests for ACLs on people that I think might have torn their ACL. And those tests are just really, really not that good at being able to determine it. Rarely do you get someone who has an ACL that is fairly acute that is going to let you grab their leg and relax it enough to get a positive test.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of times when they tear their ACL, the ACL is still intact, barely. Or sometimes it tears completely, and it'll develop a kind of a blood clot that holds it together.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll get a false sense that there's nothing wrong with them. You send them back on the field, and then they all of a sudden they'll just tear it. You know. So Dr. Crumby does these pivot shift tests and all this other stuff that really help him. But ultimately, it's a combination of doing these different tests. And subjective, you know, what happened was pop, you know, swelling. And then the final thing is an MRI. And the funny thing about the MRIs is the MRIs are a lot of times will show that there is not a tear. And then when he goes in, there is a tear. So they're not highly 100% accurate. You know, really the 100% accurate way, go in there with a scope, look at it, and determine if it's torn. So.
Yeah, and that's no fun.
But I haven't heard that test, so you have to show it to me and look it up, and I'll look it up and see. You know, I'm interested to learn new tests, because that's what my primary focus for this year is, nothing but ACL everything.
How often or how long do you think it is normally between injury and you seeing? Because normally, if you know I have an athlete that's injured, it could be minutes, seconds or hours before between injury and evaluation. How long do you think it's usually between your evaluation and an injury?
Oh, I usually don't get to see them that acute. Every once in a while I get lucky and they'll just come in and say, hey, what do you think? But you know, usually it's the doctor ends up seeing them first. You know, that's what you guys have to do more than I do, is out on the field to try to make that determination. And it seems like it's pretty difficult determination to make.
Sometimes.
But, yeah, so.
So do you just normally it's like a week or two or?
Okay, so, I rarely ever get to test them myself. They usually go to the doctor and then they end up coming to me, and it's usually a couple weeks. You know, sometimes I'll get the pre-ACL where they're going to have surgery, but their quad is not strong enough, and so I'll help strengthen the quad and teach them the exercises so they'll have a better surgery. I don't see them that much. And typically they, when they have surgery, it's usually about, 2 weeks after, 3 weeks after the injury. You don't have it immediately. You have to let the swelling go down. You have to let it heal a little bit. Have to, have certain criteria to meet to be a good surgical, because a lot of people think, wow, they tear their ACL and then they're in the surgery, you know, in the operative table like the next day, and that's just not the case.
Right.
My elbow hurts after throwing. What are some things I can do to help that?
Are you a pitcher or?
No. Shortstop.
Shortstop. Where does it hurt?
Like, it's like
on the outside or inside?
In the inside.
Like in here?
Yeah, but like in the inside.
Right.
Like in the middle of all.
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I would really have to look at you to be able to determine it. But I work with baseball players all the time, and there has a tendency to be a characteristic pattern of imbalances that occur that I work on. Believe it or not, a lot of the times it is because you're constantly throwing this way. Everything that goes in this way is really strong. Your pecs, your internal rotators, all those are really, really strong. So you have to stretch your pecs, your lats, and your internal rotators, and then you need to strengthen your external rotators. All the muscles that come back this way become really, really weak. And then you have imbalances that occur that put extra stress on your elbow. And then the final thing that I have people do is a stretch for the wrist flexors, because those wrist flexors have a tendency to get real tight that run right in, up to your elbow. And have them stretch that. So it's a multifaceted approach, but I have to look at the individual and determine the imbalances. But it happens. Pitchers come all the time, and I can just look at them and just see it. You know, especially the guys, because the guys throw overhead. So the baseball pitcher will have external rotation that their arm goes all the way around back. It's like crazy. And then they lose their internal rotation, you know. And so I see these characteristic imbalances, and so I do the same thing. Strengthen what is weak, stretches what is tight, and everything gets better. But I've had a lot of elbow problems myself from working out, and I tried a bunch of different things, and when I really started training my shoulder and my rotator cuff on this side is when it actually took the pressure off of my my elbow.
What are going to be some of your favorite exercises for her to strengthen her back shoulder, the backside of her shoulder?
Right. There is the classic, you know, T-band exercises where you rotate it out this way.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that I really like are external rotation with your arm up. But I like it where you not hold your arm up, but where you put your arm on a table and have a rubber band that goes this way, and then you rotate it back that way. The other thing is the mid traps and low traps. Those are always characteristically weak, and those are ones where, you know, I've given you pictures of those where you lay on your stomach and lift your arms up this way. Your low traps, lift them up this way while you're laying on your stomach. You know, those are the ones that I like to strengthen. Also, you lay in on your stomach and do external rotation in different planes on your stomach. I mean, those are my personal favorites. And stretching those pecs and lats. But it really, just to convince people to do it is my big challenge. That, you know, I think that's one of my expertise too, is my ability to talk to people, and they know that I practice what I preach, and to be able to convince you to do it. Because if you stick with it and do it, it's gonna make you a throw harder than you ever thrown before, and you're not gonna have elbow pain, you know. So I always pick a carrot, you know. I find out what people want, you know, what position they play, what they like, what they want to do, and then I throw that at them all the time, right?
Gotcha, good motivation.
How do I get to become a physical therapist?
You have to go to school and get a 4-year degree, bachelor's degree. The bachelor's degree has to have the prerequisites to be able to get into physical therapy school. So they have a couple of programs in kinesiology that cover that. I took biology, which made me had to take extra courses. So you just have to look at the school that you want to go to and figure out the courses you need to take. But, you know, the thing about physical therapy is it's really, really hard to get into. And so if you seriously want to become a physical therapist, that first day that you walk into college, you got to make good grades. I mean, I think they'll accept you at a 3.5 or a 3.25, but you won't get in, you know. 3.75 is more what would get you in. So not to scare you away, just, you know, to know what you need to get. And for me, like when I graduated from high school, I wasn't ready to go to college. I wasn't making good grades. So I took off for a while. And I'm glad, because if I would have went to college, I would have made C's and B's, got my bachelor's, and I would have never been able to become a physical therapist. When I decided I wanted to go back, it was later. I was like 25, and I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And that day that I walked in to Houston Community College for my first 2 years just to get everything together, I made straight A's.
Aisha's actually interested in physical therapy as a career, and so is there anything else you had to add about that?
It's a great profession. You just got to make sure that you love it, because, you know, people, you know, think they're going to do it for the money, and it's not that I don't get paid halfway decent, but I'm there's other professions you can make more money. I did it because I loved it, you know. I had a buddy of mine that he graduated with me, and once he got out, he goes, I'm not making enough money, so he went and started selling insurance, man. No passion for what he did. I couldn't even believe it that he went through 7 years of school. So it's 4 years for the bachelor's degree. Then after that, you have to apply to physical therapy school. Physical therapy school is a three-year program working during the summers also. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, people that are going to physical therapy school, they come out with a doctorate.
Oh, yeah.
So you could be Dr. Aisha.
Dang.
Yeah, when I graduate. All
right, we're going to close it out just in time.
We want to thank the people who helped make this broadcast possible. G Hats for sponsoring CEU Opportunities and PISD Education Foundation.
So I got a couple other little pieces of news. One, it was in the warm-up, but I didn't cover it there. Film on TV, I haven't checked, but they're taking podcasts that people can get for free and then charging people like 99 cents a show for them. So again, that's good for them. Film on TV, if you're ripping people off, good for you to make people pay for something they can get for free. But if you just happen to be listening to this on film on TV, then know that you can download it for free on iTunes or most of your podcast sources and YouTube and Ustream and all those other things. So don't pay for this when you don't have to. Another thing is, I think next Friday we're going to be talking with a dentist about some dental emergencies, so that'll be kind of a special edition. I'll release it later rather than on Friday, but we'll stream it live, talking to a dentist on next Friday on Valentine's Day. And then this summer we're also going to be working on continuing the podcast during the summer. I'll be talking to some of the people from some of the conferences I go to, stuff like that. So if you are enjoying the podcast, I'm looking for people during the summer, because it's a lot harder to do by myself. I'm not that interesting. So usually with the kids commenting and, you know, our guests, it makes it more interesting. I really just am not that interesting. So during the summer, I will be needing some guests or some co-hosts and that kind of thing. But again, those are things that are coming in the future. Just want to kind of give you a heads up, and feel free to let me know. You want to know how to get a hold of me? That's a great question, Alex. I'm glad you asked.
What?
All right, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Almost every Wednesday, you can watch live, join the conversation. And then it has links to all the other ways you can get a hold of us.
Follow us on Twitter at PHS Sports Med, Google Plus Sports Medicine Broadcast, and Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training.
For Jeremy,
George,
Marlon,
Edith,
Brianna,
Jocelyn,
Alex,
Lorena,
Marissa,
Aisha,
and Dr. Michael Pyle.
I can't call myself that.
That's a wrap.